Please be seated. Tony Lister will come and share our gospel reading.
A reading this morning from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9, verses 28 through 36. Now about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became as bright as a flash of lightning. Suddenly, they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking about his exodus, which he was about to fulfill in Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but as they awoke, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us set up 3 tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Not realizing what he was saying. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. And they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
So how are you today? I find myself often on these Sunday mornings as I stand up to preach, wanting to ask you that question. How are we? I don't think I need to tell you or talk to you about the fact that we are living in crisis times. They say the Chinese character for crisis combines both danger and opportunity. Right now, it feels very easy for me to feel the dangers, not so easy to see what the opportunities are. So in these crisis times, I believe we're here together in community because we know we need each other, and we need to help each other connect to the spiritual resources we have, ground ourselves in faith and hope, remind ourselves of what and who we believe in, tune our spirits to the divine, tap into that love. So we join our spirits with each other and the Spirit of God. That's what we're doing in worship. I feel a certain urgency, a hunger and thirst that we bring to worship right now. We need God's presence. We need God's guidance. We need God's peace that passes understanding. I believe there's a connection from what we're feeling in this time of crisis, with so much uncertainty about what's coming, so many real reasons to feel fearful and anxious. And there's some connection to what Jesus and Peter and James and John may have been feeling that day when Jesus went up, took them up on the mountain to pray. In Luke's gospel, every time something major's happening, he has Jesus go away to pray. But this time, he took Peter, James, and John with him. I believe we can see Jesus needing support and needing assurance, needing to connect to God's love and purpose. Because chapter 9 in Luke is the turning point. Jesus has been having his ministry in Galilee, his teaching and his healing. But in chapter 9, we learn Herod, the king, had beheaded John the Baptist. Ooh, That was a warning sign, wasn't it? Herod's starting to ask questions about Jesus. Who is this guy? And the conflict with the Jewish authorities were growing. Jesus wasn't following the rules. He wasn't under the temple guidance about how you're supposed to do things, and he wasn't fitting into the strict legalism of the Pharisaic reform movement. Jesus was out there mixing with all sorts of people. In this day and age, Jesus would have been mixing with the gays, the trans, all those people, the immigrants who don't have the right paperwork, all of those people, those being othered right now. That's what Jesus was doing. He highlighted, he spent his time with the needy, he ate with tax collectors and sinners, he told positive stories about a Samaritan as a model of faith. So right before this passage that Tony read, Jesus had turned to his disciples and said, well, what are people saying about me? Who do they say I am? And they said, well, they're saying, you know, you're John the Baptist come back from the dead, or you're the prophet Elijah, who many believe would return before Messiah would come. And some others just say you're one of the great prophets of old. In other words, people don't know, but they think you're special and important, and they're talking. And then Jesus said, well, who do you say that I am? And for the first time in the gospel, one of them answers. Simon Peter said, you are the Messiah of God. You are the Christ. And immediately Jesus began to teach them that he was going to undergo great suffering, be rejected by the elders, the priests, and the scribes, and be killed. And then on the third day, rise again. Jesus had come, and I believe it was a process, had come to understand that his way, his path, was going to be the way of the cross, a way of suffering, a way of self-giving love, of dying rather than choose force or violence, of proclaiming God as total love for everyone. His way was a way of compassion and tenderness for the needy, for the marginalized, for the foreigner, for the stranger, for all of us. This was his teaching, and he realized he was running up against the powers that be, and that the way forward was going to lead him to a final confrontation, to suffering and rejection and death. So on that day, he had taken those closest to him, Peter, James, and John, and he went up on that mountain to pray, just like he took them with him later in the Garden of Gethsemane. Remember? Those were the three that he said to come with me, pray with me. He wanted their community and support as he tried to seek God's support. But then this something happened. This mysterious, mystical moment, this vision, Jesus experienced support in a whole different level, didn't he? Elijah and Moses showed up. Now, I know. Some of us in our 21st century minds, whatever. Let your mind, your doubts, your intellect relax. This was a mystical experience, okay? Not rational, mystical. Jesus experienced it, but so did the three with him. Moses and Elijah, the commentators want us to know, symbolize that Jesus was the fulfillment of the law and the prophets. I don't disagree with that. That's true. But I also think they just showed up to be with him. And I was thinking about Moses and Elijah. Yes, Moses was the great liberator who, under God's call, went and spoke to Pharaoh and brought the Israelites out of slavery, the liberator, the Exodus. But Moses was also the one who said at that burning bush call, but God, I don't speak so good. My tongue gets tied. I stutter," or whatever it was. He doubted his call. He didn't think he could do it. And later, when he comes down the mountain with the Ten Commandments and sees that the people have given up hope on him showing up and are worshiping foreign gods, he was so mad he threw the commandments on the ground and broke them. This was not a perfect man. He knew about doubt, and he knew about struggle, and he knew about not believing in yourself and wondering what you were doing. 40 years in the wilderness they spent. And Elijah, yes, he's considered the greatest of the prophets. Sorry, Isaiah and Jeremiah, I'm not quite sure why, but Elijah is considered the greatest. And yet Elijah, I mean, he was the one who challenged the 450 prophets of Baal, the kings and his queen were worshiping and everybody was turning to these false gods. And he challenged them to the showdown on the mountain and said, call down your God and see if your God can send fire to take up your offering. And they prayed and hollered all day long and nothing happened. And then Elijah soaked his altar in water, soaked his offering, and prayed to God, and lightning came down and consumed everything. That happened to Elijah, according to 2 Kings. And a few days later, he was so scared of Jezebel that he was running to hide in the cave in the wilderness, afraid he was going to die. He knew something about doubt, too, and about fear, and about wondering if this really is the right path, and thinking he was the only one. He said to God, I'm the only one that's still faithful to you. And God said, well, actually, there's 7,000 more who have not bowed their knee to Baal. These are the two that God sent to Jesus to give him strength and courage for the way ahead. And they talked to Jesus about his coming. Did you notice it? A lot of translations say departure, but this translation, the New RSV, says his coming exodus, connecting what he's getting ready to do to that first exodus, that first act of God's liberation, God setting people free. They came to talk with him, to support him, to encourage him, to confirm to him, yes, you're on the right path. And Peter and James and John got to see it too, to hear it too. I love Peter. He always just says whatever the first thing is he thinks about. So he says, it's great we're here. We'll build up these tents. We'll put tents up for you. How many of us have wanted to put up tents at a retreat where you had a great moment, or at some experience of worship where you thought, I just want to stay here? Maybe that's what Peter was doing. But what happened next was even more awe-inspiring, because all of a sudden, a cloud enveloped them, and they heard Jesus, not just Jesus, the other three also heard the voice of God. This is my chosen one, my beloved. Listen to him. Follow him. Believe him. And in Luke's telling, when all that cleared, none of them said a word. In Mark's gospel, Jesus tells them not to talk about it. In Luke's telling, it's just like they didn't know what to say. So they said nothing. Filled with awe, not understanding, not knowing what to make of what they had just seen. Until later. Later they would remember. Peter writes in the letter, 2 Peter chapter 1, We did not come to you with cleverly devised myths when we made known to you the power and coming of our Lord Jesus. We have been eyewitnesses of his majesty. He received honor and glory from God when that voice was conveyed to him by the majestic glory, saying, "This is my Son, my beloved." And we, Peter says, we ourselves heard this voice from heaven on that holy mountain. John writes in the beginning of the Gospel of John, "We have beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten Son of the Father, full of grace and truth." They were witnesses. They were the beginning eyewitnesses. And after the resurrection, they remember and go, oh, that vision we had, that he was more than somehow, just more than just a great rabbi, more than. God was doing something more. So in these times of crisis, when we don't know what's coming and we are tempted to doubt, to fear, to wake in the night and lie there and have trouble going back to sleep, to read too much news and let it weigh us down. The gospel, the good news of Jesus says, we are not alone. We have community with one another, and we have community with this great cloud of witnesses, of people of faith across the centuries. I've found myself wanting to watch movies and read stories of civil rights era, of other people of faith. They encourage me. They inspire me. But more than that, the Spirit of Jesus Christ is here with us, for us, guiding us, leading us, encouraging us and telling us, don't be afraid. There is suffering, there may be rejection, there may be struggles, there may be trials and temptations. There may be we don't know what. Much of what we have put our trust in is crumbling. But our faith is not crumbling. Our God is faithful. The writer to Hebrews says, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, all these people of faith, let us run with faithfulness the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. The joy is knowing God's love, and we don't have to wait to heaven to get there. We can know that joy right now. So Hebrews, the writer says, lift up your weak knees and press on. Persevere. Do not lose hope. Do not lose faith. So we come to this table of Jesus Christ. We're Baptist. We don't believe something necessarily mystical happens here. And yet, the taste of bread, the drink of juice, the gathering together around Christ's table, the Spirit of Christ is alive and powerful as we do this. Let us come and receive the gift of God for us, strength for the journey, courage for whatever comes, faith and hope that is for this life and beyond, that whatever comes, God will never leave us alone.